Club 610 here on a Friday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you, and Harold Truens from Fox 4 joining us. It's been a little while, Harold, since we had you in studio. What's going on, man?
Man, I'm enjoying this weather.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not going to be as
tonight,
warm as last
until tonight,
weekend.
But yeah, yeah, I've been enjoying the weather. You know, you were just mentioning about weekends. I'm just ready for the weekend. It's one of those things where you're like, when you see the sun out on the weekend, you're like, okay, people are actually doing stuff. They're out. I'm like, yeah, why am I at work right now? But, you know, hey, somebody's got to do the old Friday and Saturday night and Sunday night broadcast. But
where are you going to be at this weekend? I mean, there's a ton going on. We were saying it's, you know, we're going to talk attendance in a second, but Sporting and Current and the Royals, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I know PJ will probably be at Sporting tomorrow. I'll be at Royals Sunday. You know, the thing is, they're all at night. So, again, I got to do the night newscast at night.
Enough.
But, I mean, I think you couldn't go wrong with all three. I think it's fascinating when you talk about soccer now. This is like the first time I think they play both at the same time. Now they're in different stadiums. So that's
the opener.
Be interesting.
Oh, true. Yeah. Wasn't the opener?
Well, that was during the afternoon.
You're saying both at night at the same time.
I got you. So we'll see how that plays out with the crowd. But I mean, the Royals, they should be getting better attendance. Man.
Well, that's what we were talking about earlier. Like, I understand school's not out yet. Yeah. And so on a Wednesday night, I'm not expecting yet that there should be 20,000.
Yeah.
But Friday night, Saturday night,
the Friday night fireworks, when that comes back, it usually goes up. But a lot of that is because it's the fireworks.
Yeah.
Like,
what do you think it is tonight?
I don't care what it is that draws people to the stadium. People need to be there. Harold, guest always gets first choice.
Ooh.
I have Helles Lager.
Yes.
Fat Tire.
Yes.
I have a Miller Lite.
Also, yes.
I have a Black Cherry Vanilla Cork.
Yes.
I have a an IPA out of Memphis.
Ooh,
and then I have two Cherry Lime Blossom Corks. It's a variety pack today.
This is the toughest decision I'll have all day.
You know?
Man, give me the... What was the second one you said?
Fat Tire? That's just an amber lager from Colorado.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds pleasing. Give me the KC beer call. Keep it local.
You want the Helles?
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's keep it local today. But yeah,
Munich style lager?
I think the answer to your
question,
Alex, though...
Feel nice today.
I could see like just below 20,000 tonight, just because it's Friday. And I mean, like, the word's out there. The team, I mean, granted, they played the White Sox for seven games.
Yeah, like, I feel like
terrible,
it should be over 20, but I'm kind of with you where.
I think it's going to be 18, 19, but, like, that's just me. Like, it's hard. I mean, they had this conversation during 2015, right? It was still like, we were still 100 games into the season. Everybody's like, hey, the team's actually good this year. Please come. 2014, I should say.
Yeah.
So, like, you just got so much, like, still non-belief or just like, hey, what do we go there? Or, you know, there's an issue of, like, oh, we can't do anything before and after the game because there's nothing to do out there. But, you know, that's another conversation for another day with a smile on my face.
Sounds like you were pro downtown stadium, Harold.
I was pro downtown stadium. I was not pro the plan.
Okay.
I was less pro the Chiefs plan than the Royals. I would have preferred the East Coast location.
I was pretty not pro plan on that either. So, yeah.
I just didn't think.
I'm not sure it
was a plan. I'm pretty sure they just showed me a concrete bridge and said, money, please.
I needed to be wild.
Well, while we're on it, what do you think it ultimately ends up being? Fast forward about a year or so from now.
Well, I mean, I know that, you know, just from reading around and what our Fox 4 crew said, I mean, doesn't seem like there's a real rush right now.
Right.
But that might be a good thing. They need a plan. I mean, let's not forget the lease is 2030 and 2031. There's still time, but like
time's getting short.
Time's getting short because like there's the World Cup you got to think about.
3 years to build.
There's 3 years to build. So like, and then you got to put in planning and work. You got to get, you know, all these factors in play here. So that's why it seemed like it didn't work the first time. It was so rushed. It felt rushed. I mean, they were changing things the day of, but now it's like, okay, take the time, get a good plan. Make sure that it's spelled out to people, like, how much do I owe you? I owe you X amount of dollars. I know there's a whole thing about the tax continued, but it still wasn't clear. And then you got to talk to the other side. In this case, the Casey Tenants and all the other people that, you know, that did a pretty good job with their grassroots efforts. But I think people were voting against the plan, not against moving downtown, not against remodeling Arrowhead. They were moving against the plan.
There was a ton of, as
there
we discussed.
There needs to be some clarity. And this has happened in other cities, too. There needs to be clarity.
There does. And I don't think there's one particular issue. We've talked about this over and over. I'm sure you have for the last 3 weeks or whatever. But just that when you lose by 16 points, it's not just the plan. It's not just the location. Some of it, it's not just you don't want to have billionaires getting public money. Like, there's so many things that went into why this thing didn't pass.
They spent over $7 million on advertising. I know in our air and other air. I mean, how often are we going to have John Sherman and Clark Hunt in the same room offering themselves to talk about whatever you want to talk about for 10, 15 minutes to local reporters? it's just like they thought they did what they could, but it was a lot traditional in the sense. It wasn't like, and I mean, I granted, I give Sherman some credit for going out there and trying to talk to people, but you got to talk to the right people. You can't talk to like nice sit down selected areas. You got to really talk to the people that are involved in all this to get the vote.
What did you make of the latest, though? I think on Monday's show we discussed, or Tuesday, it was an interview on Monday. Brian Platt, the Kansas City, Missouri sure, city yeah. manager, was on. I can't remember.
KCUR.
KCUR. Mm-hmm. And he basically said that, you know, they can bypass Jackson County, which, by the way, I think is probably smart.
Smart.
Considering how that played out. Yeah. But also the more interesting part was perhaps a public vote's not even needed if the city takes control.
Well, I think they can look toward the Sunflower State for perhaps a public vote isn't needed.
But mm-hmm. she right? said she wasn't going to recruit them.
Yeah.
That means never.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's
you
a
know,
whole other look, conversation.
Politicians, I don't know if you noticed, Cody, they sometimes skirt the truth a little
bit. GMs, too, by the way. We say that with, like, GMs we listen to too? Brett Veach. I'm like, I think Brett Veach said 100% truthful things today? Hell no.
We were reading along the same lines. They were trying to transition into, like, speaking to people who skirt the truth.
General managers. So a lot of it is always, like, reading between the lines. I think every once in a while, Brett Veach still has moments of honesty. Mm-hmm. I think he's gotten better at lying. I'll say this. I think in his early first couple of years, he would tell you more truth than he was supposed to. And then as time went on, he got better at like telling you some truths and some things that factually weren't there.
He's a Nuggets guy.
But the way he talked about Wanya Morris convinced Alex and I that they're definitely not going to go Wanya Morris for sure. Game one, nobody pushing him. They're either going to sign some salty veteran to try to shove him out of that spot or at least compete with him, or they're going to take a draft pick to take the job away from him.
I think there were two truths, and that was one of the big truths that took away from it was Wanya Morris. He was serviceable. No, let's not get it wrong. He was serviceable. But even when you listen to Andy Reid say it, it sounded like it was more like, hey, you got his feet wet. It was a learning experience. They never said, like, yep, that's the guy. So, yes, they will bring in competition, whether it be a veteran or somebody they draft. I know everybody's pointed to the BYU kid if he's available.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really a matter of, like, him. And then the other one that also kind of stood out to me is when he said, yeah, we got about 15 to 18 people as first round grades, five of them quarterbacks. I'm like, so you got 11 to 12, 13 people you're really working with there.
Yep.
So that tells me, like, especially when he said, like, no teams want to work with us, which I think that's just a common sense truth, that nobody wants to work with them. It's going to be really hard for them to move up if they want somebody they really want. And then the value in that is, okay. And he keeps mentioning second round, third round, quarterbacks, mm-hmm. defensive line depth. Offensive line depth is like, you want to just move down?
I think that.
And get a couple guys that you think you just, fit in?
Especially because you don't need starters. We went through it. There's like one starting job that's for sure open, left tackle.
Yeah. It feels like move down wouldn't be a terrible option. Look, if there's someone.
If you like the depth.
If there's someone that's out of the 10 or 11 guys, you have first round grades, let's say there's 10 or 11 non-quarterbacks, like you were saying, Harold, and much like the Trent McDuffie thing from a couple years ago, look, if it's pick 23 and one of those guys you thought was off the board and going to be off the board in the first 15 picks is there, okay, you might try to trade, but then you run into who's cooperating. I do think it is not set up terribly with the NFC teams in front of you, though. I know Buffalo was there, but there's four picks in a row, I think, from NFC teams, 22 to 26, something like that. NFC teams you would think would be a little more willing to pull off a trade.
Someone's got to be trading with them.
I said it flexible, but they're still, you know, at the end of the day, they're all in competition for one trophy, right? Whether it's for the AFC or the NFC. And so they're thinking to themselves like, hey, no, heck no. So,
but if, like, it's the right trade and if it's the right move for you as an organization,
I can clearly see, like, if they've got one guy in mind and let's say, I mean, I don't have the lineup right in front of me, but let's say it's Detroit or somebody that's like nearby, even though Detroit's probably gonna do whatever they can because they're hosting it. But let's just facetiously say it's Detroit. Hypothetically say it's Detroit. And they're like at 24 and KC's at 26 or whatever. This is a hypothetical situation. I can see them swapping just because it's like, all right, it's close enough. You want this guy. We don't want this guy.
And then they can have their same moment just like the Chiefs. They can stand out there for pick 32, take a bow, and move on.
There's no Lombardis for them to bring out.
No, no, a little less.
Yeah, they can't open up with Kelce and Mahomes with the trophy out there. Yeah, that was a great situation. I can't believe the draft was here last year. And it's like, without
it's already been a year.
There was so much hype
nuts
for that. And this year it's like a letdown hype wise.
For sure.
Yeah, because it's like, one, it's not here. But two, like, okay, you're picking last. Like, you know, like,
waiting around all Thursday night.
Around, like,
and not, you're not like waiting for them to take a quarterback. Because I remember when they were taking in the 20s, but you're like, ooh, might take a quarterback.
Yeah.
Got to be on watch. I was at the Chiefs facility for that. We're all sitting around like eating the same dinner they serve. John Dorsey used to bring cookies in. And you just sit around and you'd be like, all right, well. Or just hang out. Like, the Chiefs have traded up. You're like, oh, time to spur into action. Oh. I don't even like think that's going to
happen.
Yeah. Look, I think in the next 3 years they should do that. I just don't think it's going to happen this year. I think... Like, the point I've always made, I don't know that any team thinks this way, but like, hey, if you're going to trade it for that, it's got to be for a quarterback. I'm like, not if you already for sure have the quarterback. You can actually risk greater by going up than anyone else because the odds that it burns you forever with Mahomes are so small that if you get it right, you might destroy the league even worse.
Yeah.
Like, if you go up to 15 and get Brian Thomas Jr. and it turns out you got the second best wide receiver in the draft, you can bury some teams.
Well, I mean, receiver death, I think another thing Beach said, receiver death is good, especially in the higher end, like the top 6-7. I mean, if you're there and you've got Xavier Worthy, you got A.D. Mitchell, you've got Leggett from South Carolina, Xavier Leggett, I mean, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, from South Carolina.
I think that sounds pronounced.
I said the same thing. Yeah, I keep hearing, I see some people say
Leggett.
Leggett or Leggett, I don't know.
I mean, because truth be told, I didn't watch too much South Carolina this year, but I did watch a lot of Texas, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, if they're available, I mean, they look like some guys are like, all right, just push the button. Unless you just really are like, we'll know which way they lean if they're going tackle in the first round, if they put that much importance on it, because we forget Rashee was a second round guy and that worked out fine. So if they like the depth there, do they try to move up in the second round? Like there's a lot of things that play that could do.
Do you buy that? And that Rashee Rice legal situation is not changing their draft process.
I don't think it is.
I don't think you need to, because we've seen this play in the NFL a lot. While it's obviously a terrible decision that was made by Rashee Rice, and he's got some serious legal consequences and financial consequences, he's getting, a 6 or 8 game suspension max?
Yeah.
And maybe not even this year. Like, this isn't the same as the Tyreek Hill thing where they found out 2 days before or whatever the new audio or the day of the new audio. And they're like, oh, they might be out of the league, right? Yeah. And
they panic draft Nicole.
It's not the same.
An accident.
I think they need a wide receiver.
I remember being
but...
there that day and they tried to convince us it wasn't. They liked him. And I'm sure they did like him. They liked him enough to draft him.
Mm-hmm. Helped him win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it helped him win a Super Bowl. Three. He won 3 Super Bowls.
That's true.
I don't think there's going to be like that type of, we need to make a panic hire here like this was. I think, it seems like Rashee's been very truthful with them. Like, he's working out. He wouldn't be working out even with the teammates he has now down in Texas if it wasn't for, not for your truth. Well, I think we know there's a suspension coming. I think they know that.
Right.
Everybody can figure something's coming. We don't know when, but I don't think it'll be like during a postseason.
No, so, but the guess they have to make is if he's going to jail. Like, the suspension, you can handle that and work around that. The question you have to ask yourself is his lawyer good enough or are the charges bad enough that he's going to jail?
His lawyer represented Jerry Jones.
And lost in a paternity. He lost the paternity lawsuit, but he did represent him, yes.
But, I mean, he's dealing with a high-powered guy. Yeah, he's dealing with a high-powered guy. Like, this is a state senator, too. Like,
no, this is higher stakes. Yeah. This isn't lower stakes. Yeah. You're talking about prison time. Jerry Jones is just financial stakes.
Yeah,
this is higher stakes.
I just meant dealing with Jerry Jones legal.
It's a guy that deals with high stakes.
Yeah.
Win or lose, he deals with high stakes.
Sure.
Like, he's called upon to try to pull the...
Even high stakes lawyers don't win every case, right?
No.
I mean, they just get paid more to lose by less or whatever it takes to make that happen.
Yeah. I can think of a couple of high lawyers that didn't get an innocent vote recently. That's came up in the news, but I won't say anything.
Yeah. Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 joining us.
I can think of a few.
Joining us in studio. When you're thinking about the rest of the draft, middle rounds or whatever, how do you feel about the running back spot? Because I think this is the last full year of a really good Isaiah Pacheco, just fun to watch, dominant back. And
I'm worried we're not even going to get the full year, but go ahead.
So how do you view that?
A year, try to look around the waiver wire, get a veteran in there. We don't know about Jarek. I mean, we do know Clyde's there, obviously, and he's only there for a year.
If you're already bringing back Clyde, you think you just go with the rookie that maybe has the same skill set of McKinnon, late, drafted the fourth or fifth round?
We could see a seventh round pick, a la Pacheco. I mean, we forget he's a seventh round guy.
Yeah.
Hell, we could see a UDFA come up and somehow. I mean, like, that's the thing about running back now. They're valued so low down the totem pole now. I mean, You don't mean to tell me that there's at least two or three running backs on Brett Veach's 221 guys on his draft board?
No, I'm with you there.
Somebody.
I did think it was interesting, and we'll find out over the next couple of years when, you know, NIL has been around for 5-6 years. It hasn't yet. But he mentioned, you know, there's always a drop off, of course, from second round to fourth, but that third to fourth to fifth is a much bigger drop off, and he said it's because of NIL.
That point, I would say that running back in college is a lot like what college centers are in basketball, if you think about it, because the college center in the NBA is not really used a lot, like, you know, like the Hunter Dickinsons of the world, the Zach Edey's of the world. Now, I mean, they'll get drafted eventually, but you see their spots aren't there. But then college, I'd say the running back, because college teams still rely on the running game a lot in college football. But then when you see to go to the NFL, it's like, what, I got 2-3 years? Like, no, I'm going to get my million in the NIL if I can.
Let them take the tread off the as low as running backs make in the NFL.
Yeah. I'm taking my – if I get big time NIL, I'm not going in the seventh round. I'm going to stay here and run as long as I can.
I'm not even – honest to God, based on running backs, if you were at a high level, if you were like the running back at Ohio State that helped them win a national championship and you were going to be a third round guy, you would probably better serve yourself taking the NIL money for a couple more years – entering the draft and just playing out your rookie contract like anyone else.
Yeah.
Odds of you getting more years in the NFL for bigger pay are pretty low.
Yeah.
Right. Running back, really low.
And that's where we were having a discussion yesterday just about NIL and like how much we just still don't know about how it's going to pan out long term. And like, how many, I have no idea to answer this. How many running backs in college are getting $1 million NIL deal? I'm not saying that none are, but like,
it's going to be a big time one. Yeah.
It may not be the case. You know, I don't know if a running back in college is getting $1 million NIL deal. No. We know quarterbacks are, of course, so that's where it's, I know we're just throwing out dollar amounts.
Well, I mean, because in college football, you've got to deal with 90 guys basically on a college football roster. Whereas, you know, it's going to be really fascinating to see, like, if a guy's really good, but his projections aren't great, then it's like, okay, I got a couple options here. I can do this, or I can do stay in college, but I've got to negotiate. I've got to get people who can negotiate a great NIL contract for me. And that's where it comes down to. I mean, if you're at a big name school, like say you're at Alabama or Michigan or, you know, whoever, that's a big name school. Even if you're locally here, like, you know, KU, K-State, Mizzou, I mean, you mean to tell me like, all right, let's take Luther Burton as a hypothetical situation.
Yeah.
If he was projected to be a third, fourth round guy in the draft, I don't think he will be. I think he'd be probably projected first or two. But if he was third or fourth, he's like, I could say senior year or super senior year. And I know at Mizzou, like, they love me. They're going to give me money. Or, you know, and it's just for a year. As long as I don't get injured, it worked out. Or I can go to the NFL and, like, get my rookie contract. But there's no guarantee after 3-4 years that they already think of me this less.
Texan is really convinced, by the way. Yeah, Rashee Rice is not going to jail. There's no chance he's going to jail.
I don't think he is either.
Look, if it were me, I'm probably going to jail. I'll just be honest with you. Me and the level of lawyer I can afford, even if it's a first-time offender, I'm probably going to jail.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I drove 119 miles an hour in a Lambo.
I'm going
to jail.
There'll be some
sort of... I don't think he's going
to
jail.
You know what, Cody? If you ever get to a point where you get to drive 119 miles per hour in a Lambo, then you know what?
Something
happened.
And I've already been to jail. It was very short.
And you're on a
safe
racetrack. You know, one of those like, you know, Rob's always talking about the,
like the Richard Petty experience.
I've
driven a Lambo.
Was it a Lambo?
It was
a Lambo.
Oh, nice.
It was a Lambo.
Was it just like a paddle shifter?
Yeah. There's video of somewhere. There's video out there, but it was on a, like you said, one of those
design racetracks. Yeah.
And it was it was not the SUV. It wasn't
controlled. Too right, they can only let you go. Like,
so they claim but I don't know. Like there was a guy in the passenger seat next to me, and he claimed that he had the ability, like if something terribly would have happened on a turn, like he could have, he could have stopped.
Like something. A limiter,
yeah.
There's a limiter, or had to say that.
I'm sure there had to have. I mean, you go on a straightaway. It's
you're feeling good.
I mean, you'll get up there. I'm just saying, like they have a limit for
How fast did you hit?
I honestly don't know. Yeah.
Oh, man, that feels like something you should know.
So, Rob said he got to, like, 150, 170.
Yeah, I think it was probably in the 130 to 140 range on the straightaway.
Yeah.
For this.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Rashee Rice renting a Lamborghini SUV was the whole thing. It's more the financial. I think deep down that'll be the bigger ramification financially.
Yeah.
The civil stuff, he's been sued for $10 million. You guys saw that. And does it impact down the road, you know, future contracts, like how willing another team is willing to give you guarantee money?
Yeah.
Deep down, it's going to matter. It's the sad reality of it, but how good of a football player is he? That's what'll dictate the future financial earnings.
Yeah. I mean,
this contract wasn't going to make or break.
It sounds bad, like saying like it's all about what happens on the football.
Yeah.
It sounds bad because the people's lives are affected. And like, I'm telling you right now, God forbid, someone actually passed away in this.
Oh, he's so lucky that he didn't kill himself or anybody else. Like,
yeah. And I mean, like, the SMU had a couple football players too, like, going through the same thing. I was like, man, you know, choose wisely, man. I mean, I know you love your college boys, but, you know, we're grown up now. So, you know, got to make some big boy decisions sometimes.
Gold, are we actually going to let Cody play?
Oh, do I get to play it on my way out the door? Out? I got to watch my daughter dance. Do I get to listen to my Kel one more time?
I would rather.
Or do you guys just going to play it on the way back? I'll listen on my way over. On the radio, like a regular person.
I think we play while you're still.
You have to listen to it while you're driving the car.
I think.
Hey, that's me on the radio.
I think we.
That was my song. I'll crank it up, windows down, sunroof open.
Get through like a red light, and you're like, yeah, you hear that? That's me.
I think we play it while you're here still.
Well, yeah. Then it's got to be like now.
Okay.
We're going to get to break on time.
I don't know if Harold heard it driving in or not.
Oh, I heard it.
Michael.
He gets to hear it a second time. What a treat for him.
Yeah, I was like, My Girl, Temptations. I was like, okay, all right.
How'd you think I did? In honor of the Temptations.
What's our scale?
1 to 10.
Ten being,
you know, I'm Bobby Witt Jr. of singing the Temptations.
6.5.
I'll take that. I really will.
Maybe a 6.
6.5 I'll take. Yeah. Okay.
This is the slump buster, huh?
This is the good part right here.
The part where they originally produced it?
This is the good part. Yeah.
You make sunshine.
Oh, dark. Did you ever take any voice lessons? As many times as you do this.
Choir. That was about it.
Choir? Like
middle school.
Middle school choir.
It was cold outside. You'll hit 300 in May.
You'll hit 300 in May.
I know you'll slay. Does me saying slay make everyone uncomfortable?
Wait. Did you say yes. I know you'll slay?
Slay.
Micah, yeah.
Micah. Can we talk about the poets department?
Michael.
Ooh.
I hit that note.
This is the part in American Idol where they're like, all right.
Garcia punches it high in the air, deep right center field. O'Hearn into the gap, onto the track, at the fence. It's over his head, off the bottom of the wall. Lofton's already at third. He rounds the bag and comes in to score standing. And Garcia sprints to third. He's there standing. A two-out Jake RBI Eisenberg. Triple.
I don't need no home runs, fortune or fame. Oh, singles and doubles, baby. One man can claim.
You can tell like the airspace.
Oh yeah.
When
I did this in one take.
Collapse here.
You this is a single take. Slay.
Really?
Yeah.
I can tell.
Wait to shout.
Oh man.
Missed that note.
Michael. Yeah. Michael. Talking about Michael.
It's funny because I tell people all the time, I went to college to be a music major.
Because
I played college orchestra for 4 years.
You'll hit
so, like, whenever I hear music, and growing up in Nashville, which is like Music City, obviously.
Yeah, real musicians.
Like people go to karaoke to get jobs. They don't go there just to dance. They go to get jobs.
They take it serious.
Yeah, like, you know, like, well, speaking of Taylor Swift, I mean, when she was 14, 15 years old, she would go to the place out in Green Hills. It's a neighborhood in Nashville. She would go there, and that's where she started singing. That's where the record company found her.
All right, fine. Well, like, I'll start getting lessons if it makes everyone feel better.
Well, I'm just, you know, Did they have a music department at UMKC?
Yeah, they got a nice conservatory there.
Use it, man.
I didn't
get a little sponsorship in there.
I think I'm supposed to maybe start teaching there this fall. Do you think I could just like work out a little bit? Like,
yeah,
hey, can I get like 30 minutes over in the conservatory? Can I take a class or something?
30? You only need 30. Just get yourself some major scales, minor scales. Get some octaves in.
Yeah, it's been too. I don't do any of that before. Yeah.
Can I be the person that leaves a half hour early, or does it have to be him? you look like you're ready to go.
I wasn't sure.
Sorry,
Gold
man.
Looks like he's ready to leave.
You don't have to go watch your kid dance. Unless you have a kid I don't know about.
No, I'm going to watch my nephews play some basketball tonight. I'm going to do that a little bit later on tonight. All right, so we're going to
get the over on your nephew. Good score. Got the over.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. It's some tournament.
They
I'm not sure.
They put him in 6.5 points, and I think he's good for that.
Look, we're putting money on U10. Come on, man.
That's a problem.
Oh, man. All right, so Cody's going to head out. We'll talk to you on Monday. But up next, Harold and I will continue talking a little bit more about the draft and what big trade could be on the horizon, plus just how many jobs are really up for grabs next here on Cody and Gold. We'll be right back. Back here on a Club 610 Friday, Alex Gold, Harold Kuntz in studio from Fox 4, Drew Nixon, Cody will be back on Monday. He dipped out a little early today. We're hanging out here talking a little draft. Also, though, somebody on this show currently made their way onto TNT. Somebody was on TNT earlier this week, or a tweet of theirs.
Oh.
So what was this? So Drew sent it to me because I think I went to bed at the time. It was late. The Warriors were already getting their ass kicked. The game was over. So it was a play-in tournament. For those that know the Warriors, this whole run and everything is officially dead now. Klay Thompson is going to be gone. All of that. What was your tweet? And then it made it on with Chuck and the guys.
No, so they do this thing called Gone Fishing at the end. And I basically just said, that sound you hear is inside the NBA producers cooking up Gone Fishing animation toward the end. And then I'm just randomly watching, and then all of a sudden, the tweet pops up to begin the entire, like, Inside the NBA show. And I'm like, and then Chuck's like, that's right, Harold. And Ernie's like, you know, doing his professional Ernie Johnson read. And I'm like, I never thought I'd see the day where Ernie Johnson's reading a tweet of mine on air. So, like,
it's a cool moment, I bet.
That's pretty neat. I'm like, it's Ernie Johnson. I mean, like, there's not many hosts I admire, but Ernie Johnson is definitely one of them for sure. Like, just.
He's universally appreciated.
He's fantastic. He keeps Shaq and Charles and Kenny in line. I mean, there are many times during the NBA season I will probably watch Inside NBA and not an actual NBA game. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, that would change if the NBA team was here. You know, I try to pretend like the Thunder are still kind of sort of a little team, but they aren't. I mean, you know, like, some people will be like, well, the Sacramento Kings, yeah. I mean, like, I know they were the Kansas City Kings.
Sure.
But for how long? So, like, yeah, I mean, it's – it's interesting just watching Inside NBA. I think that's the best studio show we got.
No, it's
easily, yeah.
Like any sport. So, but Ernie Johnson just, he's pretty fantastic. So that was, I mean, for me, it was like the thing that was really cool about it was like, oh, Ernie Johnson read a tweet of yours. Like, that's like things I just never would think that would happen, even if it was like a stupid tweet. It was like Ernie Johnson read it.
Yeah, Drew sent it to us. I woke up. I woke up to the tweet.
Some Emmy Award winning, multiple Emmy Award winning producer at TNT Prize said, hey, let's start with a tweet to start the show.
Yeah.
In a postseason. I'm like, well, okay.
Sure. They have the best like collection of, in terms of like production too, not only like the four guys, but in terms of creating the memes and doing all the stuff that they do with Shaq and a Fool, they make it the best show.
I admire how their social media hawks are just like,
oh yeah,
minions. I don't know how they find these things.
Yeah, you don't even have to hashtag or tag. Yeah, you know,
because they just inside. Type in, they know what to type in the search, and it's like, okay, that works.
Yeah, there's so many good moments I think that come out of just in general, like even just from social media standpoint of not only grabbing stuff, but posting conversations, posting the funny stuff. And then there's always the good thing is that I think Shaq's gotten a lot better at it where Charles is already a personality. Kenny's just, he's kind of just there in a way, but they all mold.
He's your gravitas X's and O's guy. If anything, Charles just says what he wants to say. And Shaq can get away with saying what he wants to say. 'Cause he's one of the best players ever played a game. So like, I mean, those three guys have credentials.
Yeah, no.
I mean, Kenny's a champion. Chuck's not a champion, but he was a great player.
Arguably the best with no title.
Shaq's probably one of the best centers of all time. So, like, yeah, I mean, they have the credentials. That's why it works.
It makes it worth staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning,
I mean,
you know?
It's not like ESPN, like, God bless ESPN, but, like, you know, they're more of a print writer. Like, Will Bond's on the show. Stephen A. is on the show.
Brian Windhorst, yeah.
I mean, they're even doing, like, the other night it was Bob Myers, who's the Warriors GM, who will be a Hall of Famer, obviously, for creating that whole thing with the, you know, Splash.
Splash Brothers, yeah. McClain Steph, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like three certified, bona fide, really good basketball players discussing basketball. I mean, they don't have to watch much film to know, like,
yeah,
okay,
they're always winning the sports Emmys for best
it's a great show.
Studio show. Yeah.
It's a fantastic show, and the play-in round finishes up tonight, obviously a couple games, and then the actual playoffs begin round one tomorrow. We got Harold Kuntz hanging out with us. We got Drew. The cameras are having issues, but you stepped into Cody's seat over there. Are you going to start singing for us? That's the deal.
I will not be singing.
That's the deal if you sit over there as you've made your way into the studio. The draft, one thing we got into earlier, based on what Brett Veach had to say, is how many spots do you think there's actually a competition for by the time we get to St. Joe? Left tackle is the obvious one. I mean, they pretty much flat out have said, and I actually do believe that. I don't think that's smokescreen. Like, truly, they don't think Wanya Morris for sure is the guy. I mean, I think it's pretty evident. Yeah. And so the question is there a first-round left tackle that's competing or probably has the inside track? Or do they go and bring back Donovan Smith or another veteran, and that's the competition?
I mean, Donovan Smith is still sitting there, and he knows the system, but it depends on how the draft board falls down. I mean, we were talking about the BYU kid, Kingsley Suamataia. If he falls down there and he's a BYU guy, we know Andy Reid's a BYU guy. Like, if there's enough sway there and they just like what they see, it's like, all right, what they do. But then that puts them in a situation where, like, you've got Wanya, who is a second-year player who didn't play much his rookie year, versus a full-on rookie. Do you really trust that as a left tackle? No, you're going to bring in a veteran no matter what. So, I say bring in a veteran if you can find one. They kind of got lucky with Donovan last year because the Bucs let him go. They didn't like his health issues. The Chiefs were like, oh, you clear it. It was fine. It worked out well. But for what I saw from Wanya, I mean, yeah, there are some ups and downs, but I think the ups outweighed the downs. Now, do I know it's like bona fide starter? No, that's why they're bringing in competition. They have to. But I do think that Wanya, at least to begin camp, to begin OTAs and begin camp, he'll be the number one guy. It's up to him to win it or lose it.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Brett say, you know, the competition aspect, and then the part of everybody says it's a deep O-line class, but we're at 32. It doesn't look as deep because we're not in a spot where we can feel comfortable. and just hope that a tackle that we like falls in. If they trade up, I don't think they're trading up for a tackle, where at that point you might be stuck where after 35 or 40 there's no offensive lineman left until you get to a depth piece in the second or the third round, where maybe you take that guy and then you have that open competition of a veteran Wanya, and then the guy who you draft is more of just a rotational guy that you can have for depth in case if Wanya goes down or the vet goes down.
I just don't know, other than left tackle, maybe you and I were talking in the break, Harold, maybe the second corner spot. Offensive line, left tackle is the only spot that's really up for grabs. Running back is taken care of. Wide receiver, no matter what they do, one and two is Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice. Yes. Yeah. And so it's the number two corner spot, which is, like, you're starting more than two corners really anyway, right? Yeah. I mean, Jonathan.
They'll rotate. I mean,
Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams.
Yeah.
And then maybe, you know, they draft a corner in the second round, and all of a sudden
You had Nazi Jones, who was good before he comes back from injury. Nick Jones
was the one that everybody was really high on.
Yeah, he was pretty high on. So, I mean, but then he just kind of reverted to being a special teams guy. So I think they're good there. Now, Brett Veach might decide, I'm just going to get one late just because I can. He seems to find them well. And as I was telling you, Alex, during the break, like, the fact that they retained Dave Merritt as their secondary coach, I mean, that's huge. He's great. I think he's really good at teaching that position. And he knows what he wants. He knows, like, look, I want him long and I want him fast. And, you know, that works. That's a formula that works for them. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily worried about the quarterback position, even though they say there's a lot of depth, but I would say that you've got to think 2 years ahead here. And let's think about how Creed and Trey and Joe Tooney are, you know, getting close to being up next year. And Creed and Trey are going to need more, you know, they're going to warrant more money. Let's think about the defensive line. You retained your defensive line that you had last year, which was such a good defense. But, you know, Derek Nnadi is getting a little long in the tooth. I mean, like, we love him, but he's getting a little long, and there's not much depth there. So, like, you need to build that up. You need to start building up your interior now. If anything, just get them in the system. Even if it's a redshirt, you're kind of like what we saw from Felix. Now you're just hoping big things show up. And if they don't, well, then, oh well. But you've got to start building that depth.
To that point, I wonder if, not that this would be the best case scenario, but you take a wide receiver and you get that position out of the way in the first round, so you can look at guard in the second or third round. You can look at defensive line depth in, you know, the third and fourth rounds, where there's more availability there, I think, in terms of guys that aren't necessarily going to break through as starters in year one, but they sit behind Trey Smith. They learn from him. You get a guy that's a D lineman in the interior to learn from Chris Jones in the third or fourth round, and you draft more for upside in the 2 to 3 years down the line, where this guy might not be ready yet, but he's a good value pick at the third or fourth round at the positions that we don't need now, but may need in 2025, 2026.
Do you guys think there's a big move, whether it's the Chiefs or not, just in the NFL, we were discussing this earlier, that sometimes there's a big wide receiver trade that happens either the night of the draft or the day or two before the draft. You know, A.J. Brown a couple years ago.
Don't remind me. I'm good.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Philly.
Yeah,
when you look at Stephon Diggs, was that already the big trade? The rumor is Brandon Ayuk. That's who I'm hinting at, because there's been some speculation about him. From the Niners' standpoint, I wouldn't trade him, because you got one more year left right now under contract, $14 million. Then you still have the ability to franchise tag him next year. To me, that's when I would consider actually trading him. I got a quarterback not making any money by NFL standards out in San Fran right now in Brock Purdy. I still have Debo and this great group. We're just in the Super Bowl this past season. I would give it another go with Brandon Ayuk as my guy, knowing that I'm probably not going to pay him. Because, like, if you're going to say, well, trade him while you can get even more, you're not, I don't care if you get a second round pick or whatever, you're not getting someone that's helping you next year the same way Brandon Ayuk can help you win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, if I were to, for the Chiefs standpoint, I would think of it this way. I mean, if something like that gracefully happened, you take it in a heartbeat. But let's think about how he discussed Hollywood Brown today. He basically said, like, yeah, he set himself up for the position where he can get basically more pay later.
Yeah.
Maybe not with us, but he set himself up in a position. He made it sound like a 1 year rental. Like, let's just be honest. He made it sound like,
yeah, I don't think Hollywood Brown's here more than a year. He's got a chance to get a huge deal.
Yeah, he's got a huge deal, and he could prove it, and he's playing with the best quarterback in the league. Great. You've got to start thinking about receiver depth, because what we saw from Sky and Kadarius was, no offense to them, it just wasn't good enough. It wasn't probably good enough for them as professionals. It wasn't good enough for the organization. It wasn't good enough for what they did. So they've got to start building that receiver depth. And we've seen Veach in the past kind of just like he did when he got Creed and Trey in that same round. Like, there's been times where he just built depth. And he's like, I'm going to get this guy. I'm going to get this guy. We need to build this receiver core. Like, anytime you can get a person that can help out Patrick Mahomes, make your quarterback happy, you got to go do it. Because, what, they only had one receiver over 600 yards last year? So, like, that sounds like something that needs to be built up. You need to get some quality depth.
Not many guys are under contract pass this year.
No,
I mean, Rashee Rice is in. Sky Moore are it. After that, Justin Watson's gone.
Yeah.
Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney's gone.
You need depth at that position. Yeah, and you can't just build it through the, you know, free agency. You've got to get some guys.
I think that's where you part of me says the Chiefs should just reinvent the room entirely, where you almost, going into camp, you'll keep Kadarius, but you almost don't. He's going to be the fifth or sixth option because of who you get. Whether it's another free agent, because Tyler Boyd's still out there. There's some others. But if you go first round, third round, fifth round wide receiver, and you say, we're just reinventing the entire room for Patrick Mahomes and trying to give him as much as he can to work with, who is, you know, some fresh blood, some people who he can lead along the way with. Rashee as a leader.
Sure.
And then you have Hollywood Brown, obviously, as a leader as well. You got, at that point, you got four or five guys who you feel comfortable with.
And you
got
to think about Mahomes' contract, too. You know, like, he's starting to take up more percentage of that salary cap. Now, I know the salary cap's going up, but you got to think about that, too. He's got to work.
Save yourself money by getting rookies in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that you got to build through the draft. Like, this is a team that's just got to build through the draft, because you got some guys in the books, like Mahomes, like Chris Jones. They're a large percentage of that salary. So you got to build up to that.
We even brought it up a couple weeks ago, where if the Chiefs hadn't won the Super Bowl, I think a lot of the conversation would be what it was with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, where I feel like, can somebody just get Aaron Rodgers some help? Because they're not winning, they need him to win, where Mahomes is still able to elevate the roster above to win. But can you imagine with guys that are two or three guys that are number three and number four, better than Justin Watson, better than Sky Moore, and can elevate the roster even more along with Travis Kelce and what they have? I mean, it makes them, the potential, I think, so much bigger in terms of offensive firepower.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another one we got to think about. You know, how long do we have Travis Kelce for around here? I mean, obviously, there's Noah Gray and, you know, like, well, Blake Bell for the time being, and Irv Smith now, but you can't replace a Hall of Famer.
I think last year was the draft to do that, though.
Yeah,
I don't think this year's draft. Like,
well, I think they thought about that when they got Noah.
A couple years. And look, he's been fine, right?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, and nobody's going to ever be on the level of Travis Kelce. He's going to go down as the greatest tight end in NFL history, but I don't think, if you were looking, hey, we were concerned he's retiring in a year. Last year's draft to me was the draft that, you know, not just because Sam Laporta went, but he was a second round pick. If everybody knew Sam Laporta was Sam Laporta, he would have gone in the top 10 last year.
Yeah.
So it's easier said than done at the end. Hindsight's always 20/20. Are you surprised, though, it sure sounds like with Kadarius Toney, whether it was Andy Reid earlier in the week or Brett Veach today, once again saying, like, we think he's the most talented wide receiver on the team. I have no problem with him going to camp because, to me, that's harmless. $2 million, whether you keep him or cut him anyway, is what it's going to cost you. But you shouldn't allow him to take the roster spot of somebody if it's one of those young guys and you're like, man, we really like him. We don't know if we can squeeze him on the roster or not. That's where I'm at. He shouldn't take the spot and prevent development of somebody else. But I'm cool with him going to camp with the team. I have no, yeah. There's no harm. You bring, there's 10 wide receivers out there at training camp anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys. I mean, like, let's think about the love affair we had with Nico Remigio.
Last year. Well, people love him and Justin Ross.
Yeah, Justin Ross. I mean, now, Justin's a situation where, like, he kind of helped out in special teams, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's interesting there. And, I mean, Nico has been PS the entire time. But I just, you have to figure out a way, like, you need Sky to step up. And I think he's capable of it. It's just last year, for one reason or another, he just got the sophomore slump. He's got to learn from that. And they're hopeful they learn. I think it was a lot of, they were hopeful they improved last year. Clearly they didn't.
Yeah, they totally misjudged the development.
I mean, like, we were sitting here last year talking about, like, oh, Kadarius Toney, like, potentially number one receiver. I'm like, that it wasn't even close. Yeah. With the number four. Like, it just, you have to have a situation where if you're in the Kansas City Chiefs predicament, and I say predicament only because it's a problem, but it's like a first world problem. But if you're in a predicament, it's like you just have certain guys that, like, you say, like, you just got to improve. Like, we're banking on you improving. And hopefully, God willing, it works. And if it doesn't, well, we find other options. That's why we build depth on this team. And that's why I think they should focus on wide receiver in this draft, because they know they saw, you can win a Super Bowl with Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce, and a couple others. But when Travis leaves, which is happening soon, you still need some guys on a rookie. I mean, like, may not be this year, may not be the next year. He said he's going to keep going until the wheels fall out. It might be 3-4 years. Who knows? He might be just a unicorn that's just been able to play until he's 37, 38 years old. And God bless him, salute him, the greatest of all time.
And Veach even mentioned the fact that
you've got to practice for the future.
I mean, he mentioned it was important to bring back guys like Mike Dana.
Yeah.
And not in all, and bring back a lot of the defensive guys, because now it opens up the flexibility, I think, with the first few rounds to, you know what, maybe we do double dip at wide receiver, you know, and try to help out Patrick a little bit, because we have the security blanket of the defense that was the best defense, you could argue, in the league last year.
I mean,
you've got Chris Jones as well.
You can always find a, you know, punt returner in the fifth round from West Alabama that works out.
That's right.
We got Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 hanging out with us in the studio. A couple more minutes left. I wanted to wrap up with the Royals. We talked attendance earlier, but this team is 12-7. They're right there in the AL Central. Nobody's going to run away with this division. You probably saw the latest Fangraphs projections, too.
81, yeah.
I mean, there's four teams there, essentially all within, you know, a point five of a game on projections. The Royals with a 33% chance to make the postseason. I want to see what happens when inevitably there will be an injury, and how do they handle that? Because we've already seen the Guardians and some of these other teams deal with it.
Yeah.
But what's realistic for you? Because I think I've seen enough to know, Harold, that they're going to be competitive all year. We're going to be sitting here in July and August. I really believe that. And we're talking about them being within a couple games of first or in first place. Like, I really think that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, originally from the start of the season, I thought 70 wins would be good. If they got the 75, it'd be fantastic. Maybe I need to raise it up to 75, and an 80 would be fantastic. Now, again, they played the White Sox 7 times, and the White Sox are terrible.
I get it, yeah.
They're awful. Curious to see what happens this weekend with the Orioles. That's a good team. Young team. Team that was just like the Royals a few years ago, down and out, but they drafted well, mostly because they got one picks, and they got Jackson Holliday and Gunnar Henderson and the catchers, Adley Rutschman. I mean, like, they got some guys.
Rutschman went one, and Bobby went two, right?
Like, they got some dudes on that team, and then, you know, they paired up with Corbin Burns there in the mound. Like, but, yeah, so I'm curious to see how they play against them. I mean, they've already played them once, but in a series, and we saw that worked out. Should've, two walkouts.
Should have swept.
But there should be. I like Seth Lugo a lot. I really do.
He's been fantastic.
Michael Walker's been a great addition. I mean, I know he's on the quality start scale. He's not been there, but I mean, we're judging guys on quality starts, which means they're doing good enough to even be judged by quality starts. And then they just got to get another. They got to get a couple other bats going. You know, maybe Cody Saul with Mikel and get him back going. Because you can't just be a Bobby Salvi and Vinny team all year. You've got to get some of those other bats going. Hey. Maybe Michael Massey coming up. That could help, too. So we'll see.
They had a 500 road trip. You'll take that every time. Yeah. And the reason why they were still able to be 500 on the road trip despite the bats struggling is because of what you just said with the great starting pitching. All right, Harold, I know it's a busy weekend for you, man. We'll be watching tonight. Tomorrow, you're anchoring at 10
on
Fox 4. Yeah. Harold Kuntz. Thanks, you guys, for hanging out with us today. Again, if you want to check out the Mikel song that hopefully gets Mikel Garcia out of the slump, you can check it out at 610 Sports KC on X as well. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. It'll be draft week in Kansas City.